the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
That was good. 101.51. That's perfect. Okay, let's get going here. Notable stories. Many of them.
I wish it was a previous name.
I got home from work today and I saw the thing you write every week, the wrap up, and it's like 60 points long. So there must be a number of notable stories you're interested in covering here, because we didn't cover 60 of them in the first hour. So
lost the chat. There's so much. And I left some stories on the cutting room floor in the first hour. So either way, Joey, there's lots of stuff we got to do. We should actually sell this on our Patreon or something.
when we set it up. Yeah,
it's not happening. Anyways, new home buyers in the United States. Looks like they may be subjected to some form of a targeted UBI, because President Joe Biden was on Twitter yesterday or 2 days ago.
God, anyways, what a story this is. Yeah,
I can't believe it. So he was on Twitter and he wrote that he has a housing plan. And what is this housing plan he has? Well, he's thinking about giving $400 a month to households who buy their first home. No, so not individuals, but households. So 400 given to the actual household per month. And that money will be giving out to those first-time home buyers for a period of 2 years.
Unreal. Right.
So the question initially comes up, is this good politics? Because I understand what they're trying to achieve. You know, it's targeting a small segment of the population. We have to be honest. It's not going to be covering a lot of people. So you're going to be impacting positively a very small section of the population. Renters who don't have enough scratch out there to buy a home, well, they're going to be shut out and continue to be shut off from the marketplace. They have no access to the $400. Mm-hmm. People already owning homes, they're going to be on the outside looking in. So this type of politics is going to be just impacting a very small amount of people.
Right.
And what happens when that $400 runs dry? Because anybody who remembers what happens with the subprime some 15 years ago, the subprime mortgages, it was cheaper for a period of time until it was priced in as per the market. And then at that point, people were unable to afford their house. This won't be as drastic as a subprime, because we're dealing with a very small segment of population.
And It is as dumb.
Yes. It's on par with that. And on top of that, they're probably going to be screened in at the current mortgage rates. So they're not excluding the $400. That $400 will just be extra money that's coming in. But if rates go up, or if the economy continues to tank, somebody loses their job, number of different variables comes into play here. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to afford their home. So you already have right now $34 trillion in debt. That's what the U.S. is right now. They're spending $1 trillion annually a year just to deal with the debt.
That's it.
This $400 a month, where is this money coming from? It's going to be more debt, right? So what happens when you pile more money into the debt? Money gets devalued. It continues gets devalued, making hard assets like homes even more expensive. And then the cycle continues. So you're just dealing with a problem by creating a bigger problem that's going to be uncovered.
Yeah,
in
you
the
just
future.
Roll it.
So
yeah.
The selling of the future for today, I'm not a fan of it, but then again, this is targeted UBI. I can't believe they're even thinking about this thing, but hey.
How do you sell this to the UBI proponents? Like, I'd be curious to hear what Floyd Marinescu would say about this. Whether you agree or disagree with UBI, the people who buy homes are not the people who need it, right? So that's one problem I have. Other problem, Len, in terms of the means testing for this, not for the UBI itself. You mentioned how you get that. You have to buy a home, but when you go to the bank and apply for a mortgage, does the bank factor in that you'll have an extra $400 per month if you buy a house? Like, does that drive the price of housing up? If it doesn't, I mean, it's still not great, because as you mentioned there, you're going to get used to spending that money. This happens all the time. Okay. No one lives below their means anymore. Unfortunately, that's how we get to this point. You know, if it doesn't, great. But if it does get factored in before you buy the house, and they, you know, that's how you can get pre-approved for whatever your offer is going to be, man, that's going to drive up the price of homes. Man, that's going to make sure that there's more scarcity. Man, that's going to make life less affordable for everybody. And again, like Biden sort of adding fuel to the fire here, asset holders are going to benefit greatly from whatever printing event comes next. And you're just adding more fuel to that fire with stuff like this. People are going to be dying to get into homes, trying their hardest, you know, to make sure they get that $400. I continue to ask the question. It's unpopular. Maybe it's a bit abrasive. Show me a person who needs $400 extra every month and has made decisions that put them in a place where they can't afford their life. And I'm not suggesting that everyone is in this position, but many are. These people don't make good decisions with the $400. Did we not talk about UBI? Like even before Floyd came on. And by the way, not a shot at Floyd. I think he makes a lot of good points about a lot of the policy positions he has. I may not agree with them, but at least they're well thought out. Meanwhile, policies like this in the States, you know, we talked about a family in Florida where the woman got UBI and took her kids on a trip and got her hair done, right? Like these people aren't that sharp. And if you just keep giving people money when clearly they don't know what to do with it, like at what point do you call this throwing good money after bad? The worst part about this, when you say it's good politics, these people are going to vote Democrat anyway. I don't even think it's good politics. It's not like you're getting additional votes for this money. You know, that's the thing I would point to. I realize that it's going to be popular among your base, but they're still your base. You're not going to lose these people if you don't give them the $400. That's the thing I don't really get. I don't understand that part of the politics. So overall, I would say this is like a not great move on the part of the Biden administration. But I mean, Len, not surprising, right? Nothing surprising about that.
But I like what Boom Dust is
right. I'm not repeating that, but yeah, I like it too. It made me laugh. Yeah.
But you're right. They probably for the majority are going to be voting Democrat. I don't know. But I'm not trying to defend.
You'd imagine that though, right? Like I think that's right.
It's just the thing is, I'm wondering how many people it's going to turn off. Like if you, like as I mentioned, a renter and you just don't have it and you're not going to be able to afford it.
Yeah.
Those people, how many of them are going to look at this and say, I'm pissed off with this?
Yeah.
You're right. I'm not going to be able to get access to it. Or an existing homeowner, like they're saying, I'm pissed off at this. I'm not going to get access to this. So you're probably going to gain a few, but how many are you going to lose at the same time? It's a net loss, I would imagine. Not only that, $400 a month, I'm not sure how many people are going to take advantage. Sorry, how many households are going to take advantage of it, but you're just adding it on to the debt. And
there'll be a bunch to take advantage of it. Like how could they not? If you're on the cusp of buying a home and you're like, man, you know, we could probably do it, but you have a kid on the way or some other expenses coming up and you're like, we can't. Now you're going to be like, yeah, let's do it. Let's pull the trigger. Cause you're making two assumptions, right? One, the program will continue in perpetuity. That's not a bad bet. Honestly, it's a safe bet, I think, in a lot of ways. And then the other part is that the home price will continue to appreciate. I don't think either of those are guarantees, though the first is better than the second. Again, like isn't the big problem here too, that like banks ultimately are the ones who are taking this risk. And so there is no risk. Like they just get bailed out. Everything is backstopped. Like there's clearly additional moving pieces here that could cause problems, but they don't actually have to factor any of that in. It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous.
You froze for a second there. Yeah. I'm 100% in agreement with you.
Yeah.
Is they take whatever risk they want and whatever profits they gain from it, it's theirs. But if they don't do well and eventually they go tits up, it's taxpayers that are, or
yeah,
you know what, it's every US dollar user, anybody adjacent to the US dollar gets impacted by it. And that's just a sad reality. But you know what, it's a good segue to the next story I have. It's a CNBC story. So this is again normie news, we could call it. They say that 29% of households have jobs but struggle to cover basic needs, and they're one emergency away from poverty. And this is it. Check this new term out that came up. I've never heard this term before.
Can't wait.
So it's called ALICE.
Yeah.
It's for assets limited, income constrained, employed. It's poor. Another term for lower middle
it's
class.
It's a wagey. You're a wagey.
A wagey. Yeah. You're a wagey.
Yeah. So it's
another way of just saying lower middle class. You're asset limited, income constrained, and employed. But they're throwing in its ALICE as a way to
define. God, can you imagine people just coming up with names for you constantly? Like, I just, it's like so demeaning and degrading. But anyway, go ahead.
So there's, they say that currently nearly 40 million families, so not individuals, 40 million families, or about 29% of the population, are defined as Alice. That's a significant amount.
29%
of the population.
Wow. Wow.
On top of this, Joey.
Wait a minute. Where is this? Here?
In the United States.
United States. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Still, it's 29% of the population.
Higher here, honestly. Yeah. Okay.
So that's Alice. And on top of that, you have almost 38 million Americans, I'm not talking about families, but actual individuals mm-hmm. that live in poverty. And this comprises 11.5% of the total population. So Alice plus the people living in poverty, doing Len math, that's 40%-ish right off the bat of American people that are financially fucked.
Yeah.
That is a significant amount of the population. Now, throw in some other factors here. You have credit card debt. Right now, it's over a trillion. I think the number I last saw was 1.2, 1.3 trillion. What the fuck? I'm just splitting hairs with this. So they're saying also delinquencies on payments for these credit cards are shooting up, the highest in 12 years. How much longer can this last? It's got to be the burr has to come much sooner than a lot of us anticipate, right? If you're looking at 40% are just struggling and they're not going to be able to get out, credit cards.
It's not going to be. It's not going to be burr. It's going to be forgiveness.
I'm just adding that into the same. Fucking,
yeah. Right? I would too. But people who are supporting, like whichever politician does the Jubilee, everyone's going to say this is, you know, it's not inflationary. We're not running the printer. It's not the same as debt issuance. Blah blah blah. Like, okay, I guess. But anyone paying attention will notice that the price of gold goes to 4,000. Bitcoin goes to 500K. You know, in a night, when that stuff comes into play. It's crazy that like Americans, when was the last time you were in the States? Why don't I start there? When was the last time you were in the States?
Before this decade.
I'll tell you, I was there in October last year for a skin.
Detroit.
Oh. I was in Washington. And
you went to Detroit too recently.
I went to Detroit the year before for a skins game. And this year I went to Washington. Len, my wife and I got there a little before everyone, so we couldn't check into the hotel. So we thought, why don't we go to Walmart and get beers and food or whatever, you know, whatever our contribution to the tailgate tomorrow.
Was this in Maryland or DC or?
It was in Maryland. No, it was in Virginia. Oh, It was in DC. And it was like fucking 10 minutes from the White House, like close. And so whatever, we're in Walmart there. And I said to my wife, like, everyone here looks poor. Everybody. And like people are screaming at each other. There's no like obvious order in the aisles. You see more ass cracks than full sets of teeth. You name it, like all the telltale signs. And I gotta give you one stat
here.
Yeah.
Washington, interestingly enough, I'm talking about DC, has the most millionaires per capita.
Highest income disparity in the world, that city. Yeah, it's up there. Yeah, for sure. So you go in that Walmart and everyone looks poor and stupid, but Len, every cart is full of fucking shit.
Like, what do you mean shit?
Like electronics and video games and like dumb houseware stuff and gadgets.
Are they living or stolen or like
no, they're gonna buy the shit, but like it's shit that clearly you don't need. Clearly you don't need, you know? And like when people say like, oh, what, like the U.S. has 40% of its population under the poverty line or whatever that stat was you just gave, Alice.
whatever the term is.
The thing I can't help but wonder is like, is this just a bad case of Keeping Up with the Joneses that's gone completely wrong over, you know, 50 years of free debt, basically? Is that how these guys got here and now it's just too late to turn back? They'll just spend and spend and spend because their neighbors are spending and spending and spending. But the thing is that neither the neighbor or the person catching up to the Joneses actually has the money. There are no actual Joneses in the story, you know, but everyone thinks that they're trying to keep up. But like the whole thing is just a nightmare whirlpool of, you know, despair and debt. That's how it seems to me over there. The times I've been.
Joey, I don't see the same thing here. How many people have high-end cell phones?
Everyone does. But cell phones
do you need it?
I know, but
you get a Moto G from
the point. The point is that like the phone thing is deflationary, right? Like, yeah, the price of cell phones is going up a bit, but at least the fucking quality is going up. And they're subsidized. They're subsidized. Great example, right? Like everything is subsidized goes up in price anyway.
It's all relative. You could buy a cheap Moto G for $100 and still do exactly what you're doing with your
Samsung or iPhone. Post on Instagram from your Moto G without people being like,
you can do the exact same thing.
So with your camera, your camera stinks.
Don't matter. It's still going to be like 13 megapixels, which is still like, you know what I mean? Like people just want the best. They'll pay for it. And without any thinking about what's going to happen in the future, they'll just put it on credit and fucking deal with it.
There is like there's a very unpopular discussion to have here that I won't have about what social supports have done to the general intelligence of the population. And until we start talking about these things, like we're just never going to solve these problems with debt. You're going to keep getting policies that give people money. They're not going to know what to do with it. And you're going to have to give them more money. Policies that, you know, ensure that people need to go into debt to get things done. They go into the debt and they can't pay it. And we got to forgive it. Like I tweeted that picture the other day. That was somebody on my fucking Instagram feed. That's somebody I know. Okay. Not well enough to care what they think of me, but this idea that like this person is about to teach a class at a major American university about behavioral psychology of cats. Who the fuck is paying for that course? And even better, who the fuck is paying that person to teach it? We're done. We're done, man. We're finished. This party is over. Now you're just waiting to see when the cops break it up, but they are going to break it up. And I don't know if you've ever stayed at a party too long, Len, but the sort of people that are around when the cops come to break up a party are not the people you want to be hanging out with. Those are the people who are left at the party right now. It's not a good situation at all in the States for a lot of reasons. Some of them we can't talk about, unfortunately, but you guys get the idea, right? You keep giving people money and they keep fucking things up. You got to decide at some point whether it's worth continuing to give the money or you got to come up with a better idea. They don't seem to have one because you don't get votes with better ideas. That's another problem, another huge issue in all democracies. We're all suffering from this.
That $400 story I just mentioned a couple of stories ago, this is a good story that's going to piggyback off that. It's about U.S. renters data. And so it's time, Joey, you and I open up the terminal. We haven't opened up a terminal for some time.
Where's SB? We got to get SB over here.
Because this is actually a story from Bloomberg. So they say, Bloomberg says that rent in most major U.S. metropolitan areas have risen some 1.5% faster than wages in the last 4 years. Am I gone or am I still there?
You're still there.
Okay. It was blank on my screen. Anyways, so yeah, the rent has increased 1.5% faster than wages over the last 4 years. And this is from a Zillow Group study from 2019 to 2003. So income rose some 20% on average, but the rent is up 30% over the same period of time. So you're falling behind. Your rent is
a little more
higher.
Right? A little more of a year. Yeah.
This is just an average too, by the way, over the nation, because there are hot spots in the US like Tampa and Jacksonville, for instance, where the difference is much, much greater. And the rental housing costs have outpaced salaries in all but six of the top 50 metros.
That's insane.
San Francisco is one of those six, by the way. I guess nobody really wants to live with homelessness and crime and people
strange landmine fields. Yeah, I guess not.
But hey, I guess that's good news for people who are renting. You get a good deal out there. So yeah, it just goes to show you, like, rent, it's not, you're paying way more than what you're collecting in. When they say inflation is this number, well, the reality, it's much, much higher. Your wages are not keeping up with that. You're just falling further behind. These people that are renting, they're going to be continually renting for a long time. They're not going to get access to that $400. Just fucked all over. I feel bad for them.
What can you say? I don't know. I don't know what to say to people who are renting. There's no fix for any of this. Like, you know, especially if you voted for some of these politicians and policies, like how many, you know, terms has Pelosi done in California? What's the number? 10, 12? I don't know. It's been like 40 fucking years. You want to keep putting her in there? Fine. You know, you're going to have these problems.
Her husband's fighting off people with hammers, though.
He's busy. He's been busy, that guy. He's been busy, yeah, fighting off
people with hammers. Did he end up getting to the bottom of that case?
Do you want to really get to the bottom of that, or would you prefer not to know the details?
I don't want to know what happened in the home, but I'd love to know.
The hammer in the middle of the night, like the police get there and like
pants were worn.
Like, come on. I just don't, you know, whatever. It's fine. We probably just lost our monetization anyway. But yeah, I mean, what do you say to renters? How do you say to a renter, just keep renting, things will get better? How do you say to a renter, you know, especially here in Canada, I know this is an American story, but you're seeing the media here clearly carrying water for the powers that be. And it's not necessarily just government, by the way. I think it's, you know, corporate powers as well. Carrying water with stories like, you know, maybe owning a house isn't that great a thing. Like, of course,
it's simple.
Of course, it's a great thing.
Tell them that the local blackouts are not going to take into effect this coming NFL season. Oh,
God, I know.
And that way,
I know, yeah. Bread and circuses. Yeah, yeah, something to that, right? But yeah, it's bad, man. Like, the messaging has clearly shifted here as everyone sort of realizes that if you're renting, you're never going to be able to own a home now, right? I don't think, certainly not in any like major Canadian metropolitan area, but like the States is just as bad. People often hear talking about how our wages have split from the cost of homes so significantly since the 80s. But like, it's happening everywhere, maybe not quite at the same pace or the same with the same inertia, but it's definitely happening everywhere. More and more people are waking up to this and they're going, hey, wait a minute. Like, I thought if I saved, I'd be able to buy a house. Like, actually, it turns out that every time you save a dollar and don't invest it in real estate, you're losing money. Like, how's that? That's tough. That's how you get to a place, by the way, where people don't want to work and become apathetic. And, you know, apathy is the greatest enemy of a functional democracy for a number of reasons, but, you know, clearly creeping up here, you can see it on the horizon being a problem.
There's a story, Joey, that just, it's screaming to be talked about.
Well, you're in charge of the story, so.
It's a Fox News story, by the way. And it's talking about San Francisco, because we just mentioned San Francisco. Might as well talk about them. The city is buying vodka shots for homeless alcoholics. And this is all part of a taxpayer.
Stop. This can't be a real story. Come on.
I did some digging here, Joey. It's free beer and vodka shots for homeless alcoholics. I kid you not. It's called the Managed Alcohol Program. Check it out. This is a pilot program designed to help people with severe alcohol use disorder, AUD. And it's a harm reduction approach that aims to improve the health.
Hate harm reduction. This show is decidedly anti-harm reduction. I don't know. I'm speaking for you too, Len. We are decidedly anti-harm reduction on this program.
Well, they're trying to do this and reduce the reliance on emergency services. So I'll give you a breakdown of this managed alcohol program. So they have a goal. They're trying to reduce the alcohol-related harm, emergency department visits, and public intoxication incidences for high-risk individuals.
Wait a minute.
And they want to provide a safe space for medical supervision, social support services, and regulated access to alcohol.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. Safe supply for Smirnoff. Okay, interesting.
It's a targeted situation here where people experiencing homelessness and chronic AUD are going to get access to it. This launched during as a COVID response program, just loving it. And this is to incentivize people to stay in isolation and quarantine settings, but it's still going on today.
They'll be isolated, all right. Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
The program, it's evolving from its pandemic roots into a long-term initiative with plans to expand to 20 beds with a focus on servicing the Latinx and indigenous communities.
Oh,
vodka and beer. I can't say enough about this.
What are we going to even talk? You wanted to talk about this. What is there to talk about? There's no, just, like, what? How can we add any color to this story? Like, what is there to say? We got guys on the street who are like clearly addicted to drugs and booze. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to give them some, like, what are we talking about here?
I just love it. It's acceleration.
The mind of an addict is not, it's not, it doesn't, like, the wires are not connected the same way that, like, your mind and my mind work. When you talk to an addict about the addiction, it's beyond their control, you know, like, it's an illness truly. And I sympathize with that crowd quite a bit because I've seen it firsthand through Wayside. Like, I'm thankful for all the experiences I've had with them over the years because, like, I never was exposed to this when I was a kid. Right. I don't have any like alcoholic friends or people I can look to see like what addiction looks like firsthand. I rely on Wayside to give me that experience, and it's an unpleasant one. But it's one that's beyond the control of these people. On the same, you know, the other side of that coin is that when someone checks into a rehabilitation facility or, you know, an agency like Wayside that's like abstinence based, like, they know it's going to be hard. you can treat alcohol withdrawals, which is basically what these guys are trying to treat, by the way. You can treat alcohol withdrawals with certain medications, right? Anxiety medications, heart medications, things like that. Because withdrawals, at the end of the day, you know, everyone who's had too many beers on a Friday or a Saturday has had the Sunday scaries. The Sunday scaries, that anxious feeling you get, is in part driven by alcohol withdrawal. It's very minor, very short-lived, and doesn't have the depth, obviously, that someone who's addicted to alcohol would experience after years of binge drinking. But the same way you can't fight that feeling, these guys can't fight it either. And giving them more booze to solve the problem doesn't fix anything. It's just so stupid. It's stupid policy that stupid people think is smart, but it doesn't actually help anybody. And there's lots of evidence for this. Like, harm reduction is popular here in Canada, against all the data, showing that harm reduction is, on the whole, sort of a net negative, certainly safe supply in the same way that these guys are giving away beer. You know, if you're giving away heroin or whatever, fentanyl, the harm reduction is temporary, if present at all. And, this is an easy one, Len. I don't know why they would go through with something like this unless, like I said, you're just trying to make stupid people happy. It just seems to me like we're doing this way too often everywhere. You know, California, obviously, especially easy to talk about because they just fucking love doing this kind of dumb shit in that jurisdiction. But, there's other places too that are doing the same kind of dumb shit.
You hear stories like this, though. Doesn't it make you think we're so close to the end?
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Of course I do. Of course I think we're close to the end. Man, I'm telling you, Len, like, we joke about like the CBDC timeline. I think that's coming ASAP. I think there's going to be a real push to get everyone off of self-custody Bitcoin. I think it's going to be a real push to make sure that people can't leave the country with their capital. There's going to be a war. There's people on Twitter who I believe are like credible, relatively smart people talking about the next false flag being something to do with alien invasion or alien presence, in the sort of near universe. None of this stuff is off the table. Anyone who thinks that there's a non-0% chance that the end of sort of societal, the end of the societal fabric that you know and love is not that close. Like, I don't know, man. I'd love to know what you're looking at that tells you that it's not that close, but I think a lot of us feel differently, and the evidence really is overwhelming on our side, I would say.
It's just going to happen very soon. I see this and I'm just like, it made me laugh. It was just a true acceleration story, but
yeah.
Savings. Let's talk about savings.
Sure.
Because it's another good discussion, because there's some interesting stats with respect to savings in the United States. And it was reported that about $2.1 trillion worth of savings have been wiped out of the U.S. economy since August 2021. So all those stimmy checks that went out, people's bank accounts that they were slightly inflated, there was an uptick in money sent to people's bank accounts, credit card debt that was being paid off. People were spending money, at least wisely for the most part, in some respects, at least from what I can see, all gone, as you mentioned. $70 billion a month of savings have been depleted from American savings accounts. And this has been going on for over 2 years, $70 billion a month. And credit card debt went from $330 billion to a record $1.1 trillion.
Nice.
When you talk about this type of thing, what happens is...
How many Modern Warfare skins can you buy for $1 trillion in credit card debt?
They better be damn worth it. And it must give you some sort of benefits and bonuses in the game. It just can't be just strictly just look. Anyways, this money all flows uphill, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when money enters into the market, it temporarily may enter into people's bank accounts, but they have to spend it, right? Yeah. They have to pay for food. They got to pay for transportation. They got to pay for housing, all that. So it's spent, but it will end up eventually in people's bank accounts or corporations' bank accounts that they're already well off, because they're the ones providing the goods. They're the ones providing the services, and they're the ones that they don't need to spend the same way that other people need to spend. They'll just hoard all this money. So as more money comes flooding in, just the people that have, they're going to have even more. The people that don't, they're going to have even less by comparison. And it just goes to show you that this whole thing is, it's just, like I say, it's going to blow up very soon. I don't know when, but we're talking trillions here. That's a fucking huge number. And I don't know what else to say. It's just, it's mind blowing that people aren't fucking just calling these people out and saying we did fucking something wrong, but nobody's saying much. They're just
great point by you though on the trickle up economics of stimulus and savings and whatnot, right? Savings are meant to be spent on large items, and so you benefit the asset holder from whom you purchase the item, the car dealer, the apartment building, whatever, right? That's what, when people talk about COVID being like the largest wealth transfer, there's some discussion about, you know, the sort of broad strokes mechanisms. You know, they closed all mom and pop shops, had to get rid of those stores, and you were able to shop at a Walmart and go get a McDonald's burger, but you couldn't go to the gym, couldn't support a local business, whatever, right? That's one piece. But the piece that you're talking about is the bigger one. It's the one that's less discussed, especially in traditional media. Every dollar that was given to you by the government, you're paying for twice in the inflationary measure that comes from that, and by losing it to a corporation and giving them more power, more pricing power over you, more dominance over you. Insane, man. And like, I think the biggest problem, and you know, we talk about this sometimes on the show, you and I, we talk about it offline too, in some of our group chats and when we're just shooting shit. But like, the problem is a lot of people haven't realized how bad it is yet. And when everyone figures it out around the same time, which our species seems really good at doing, that's when you get real problems, right? When you reach a critical mass of people who are unhappy with the situation and don't see any way out, you get, what is the famous line? Rational people doing irrational things. And when you get to that point, you have a problem. And, you know, again, I don't know how close we are. I think we both agree that we're closer than a lot of people realize. And if you look at policies around, you know, the way that people share information online, not just here in Canada, but all over the world, it seems to me like we're not the only ones who think that having everyone looking at the same hive mind and noticing that everyone is in the same boat is a bad idea. It seems to me like there's a lot of people who understand it's a bad idea. And I think the clamps are going to come down on that too, for exactly that reason.
Did you just take a look at the Bank of Canada's financial stability report?
Yeah, look like a guy on a BOSU ball on a pogo stick. That's about how stable we're looking these days.
So it came out last week. It's their stability report for 2024 and some key points. I'm reading it straight from the report. I'm not sugarcoating it. My commentary.
You can read it. I'll put a link to the report in the chat.
So they say Canada's financial system remains resilient. And they say over the past year, financial system participants, including household, businesses, banks, and non-bank financial institutions, have continued to proactively adjust to higher interest rates. But they do say that the rates of arrears on credit cards and auto loans for households without a mortgage.
Yep.
So these are people that don't have a mortgage.
No other major expense. Yep.
So the rates of arrears for credit cards and auto loans, it's back to pre-pandemic levels and continues to grow. And this is for people that are renters and outright homeowners. So people that even own a home outright that doesn't have a mortgage is part of this list. They say that about half of the outstanding mortgages are held by borrowers who have yet to face higher rates because they locked in for a long enough period of time. And so they're going to be coming up and they're going to be paying significantly higher mortgage rates once they renew their mortgage.
There's a chart in the report for people who haven't seen it. Go look at the chart with the bar chart there for the renewals. It's fucking wild. Sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
No, no problem. So this is all to say that the people that do have mortgages that are going to renew, they're going to be spending a larger portion of their income on their mortgage. And that means less money they could spend on anything else, be it vacation, movies, car payments, new car, anything. It has to go towards the mortgage because you have to pay that unless you want to sell. So they also say that business insolvencies have increased steadily since early 2022 and more sharply since the middle of 2023. If you look at that chart, its number go up. That's business insolvencies. So there's lots of things in this report. They're saying it outright. They may say that the financial system remains resilient. They provide a lot of context that things are really not looking all that great. Read the report. Check it out. They have great charts. You can even there's a lot of eye candy on there. Yeah. But the common theme is things are not looking all that great.
BOC did a good job on this. I think this is good for two reasons. One, like you said, there's a lot of visuals here, but I'll be honest, I didn't read the whole thing word for word, but it's written in layman's terms by and large. So if you, you know, let's say the only exposure you have to some of this stuff is you listen to our show, you will know what a lot of these terms mean. You know, when we talk about stuff like insolvency, for example, or stuff about credit card debt, or stuff about variable rate, fixed payment mortgages, variable rate, variable payment mortgages, stuff we've talked about over the years, it's all here. And it's clearly, this is another thing I think is interesting about this report. This is geared toward Gen Pop, don't you think?
Anybody with half a mind can digest this.
Yeah. When did they start doing data reporting and analysis for the general population?
I'm not sure if this is geared towards those people. I don't recall the last
this
year
is,
how it was
it's
written.
Not geared toward bank economists or people at that level. It's much lower than that.
But is this common amongst this type of report? They do other reports, but I'm wondering, I'd like to compare this to previous years to see if this has been dumbed down. And if that is the case, there's a hidden message behind it.
Yeah, some good comments here. Households and businesses should also continue to be proactive, planning for higher payments when mortgages and other debt renew at higher interest rates. To give you an idea how bad things are, 34% of mortgages at the moment, I guess we'll move on to this year. 30% of mortgages right now are variable rate mortgages with fixed payments. Once the renewals hit, about 62% of mortgages will be on that. Will be renewing coming out of that standard of mortgage. So people who have had the same mortgage have been paying interest only, negative AM as it's called usually, extend and pretend. They'll have to get aligned with the current state of affairs as far as the interest rates compared to their mortgage. And also then I don't remember what the outcome was, but remember Freeland was talking a little while ago about how she didn't want banks to clamp down on renewals when it came to getting loan to value in line again, because most people, you know, put money down. And so your loan to value of the house has to be, you know, whatever it is, 20% or 80 or whatever the numbers your bank that you agreed upon. But as people were having the loan grow, they got out of whack. So not only did you have to add to your monthly payment when the mortgage renewed, but you also had to pay a lump sum to get back on side with the bank. And so I don't know if whatever came from that, but if that happens too, like how are these people, how are you going to pay? No one I know has $20,000 sitting around, you know?
They'll just tack it on for another year or two on their amortization rate.
Whatever. But it's a bad situation. And the bank, for all the good in this report, I think they're selling it short, the situation, right? You can't tell me on one side that, you know, the bank is sounding the alarm about emergency and GDP per capita and things are headed the wrong direction, you know, the unsustainability of housing prices, whatnot, all that stuff from Carolyn Rogers about a month ago or 6 weeks ago. And now they release this report and say that the economy is strong. I don't fucking buy it. Nobody should buy it. And again, the reason this
say
is
that
she, right. She says she was the one who's painting the bleaker picture. She wasn't like that in the presser last week. And also this to me, the reason this is geared to answer my own question from earlier, the reason this is geared to the layperson is because the layperson saw that story about Rogers, and now the layperson is hopefully going to see this and say, oh, maybe things aren't as bad as they should be, or as they say they are. But I think anyone who's, you know, renewing, like, damn, if you bought a house for $1 million, you know, in peak COVID prices, and now you're going to go from, you know, let's say your payment was $2,000 at 1%. You know, you're probably going to go to 6% now if you stay variable.
Look at the P-Van. P-Man Van. He says, I got asked it last year from 2.2
to 7.25.
That's insane.
That'll add, I don't know.
I can't even contemplate, depending on how much.
Well, on $2,000, that'll probably add. I don't know, P Man. You tell me. Are you got to be close to 4,000, probably, right? You almost do a double, yeah.
Right, and so that 2,000 ish a month that would normally be spent on anything else is not being spent on anything
exactly.
else.
Exactly, the economy shrinks. We know one thing leads to another. Good times being had up here in Canada.
I got to ask you, the Bank of Canada, like just in the past their performance in the past, say, 6 months.
Dog shit. Dog shit.
You think so? I'm looking at this.
Like, Rich Diaz, go listen to the episode we did, because he talked about this a lot with Tiff Macklem and this the stuff that Macklem has done or has not done. I think Rich would say that Macklem had a come to Jesus moment in the last year about rates. And even though the pressure is mounted, he knows how badly he fucked up the first 2 years of the pandemic. And he has no choice but to keep him high, no matter how much the pressure mounts, political, social, or otherwise. And he's going to wait until the last possible moment to cut.
Yeah.
And when he does, that will be a mistake too. He will cut too late. The pain will already be in the pipeline. So, you know, the performance of the Bank of Canada hasn't been great, but I think the thing you would say if you were an apologist for BOC would be, look, what are we supposed to do? We're playing next to the biggest kid in the sandbox. It's hard for us to build a castle if, you know, this guy is just stampeding all over the place. That's the downside of living next to the USA. Biggest market in the world, you know, strongest capital market. But man, you know, how do you set policy, right? That's the problem. You're always kind of playing catch up and thinking about how people are viewing your capital market versus their capital market. We already have so many roadblocks in place that are becoming more and more apparent. If you add rates to that, you know, like, who's coming here? Nobody.
I'm just shocked that the Canadian dollar is maintaining its value. It's holding it around
for now. Like, yeah, for 70. Now.
For like, I suspect
when the cut comes, you know, like, that's when it's over.
But if they all cut at the same time, if it's all done, you know, even Steven, so to speak, then it's still going to maintain. It's just the one thing I the dollar milkshake theory is going to take into effect. So eventually, it's going to impact the Canadian dollar just because of the, you know, people have the relative perception of strength of the United States dollar. But last story, I'm just going to touch on it really, really briefly. We don't have much time, but I just want to say it. CP24 article says that one way to decrease temporary residents is to make them permanent.
This oh my God, Len.
Suggestion says that one way Canada plans to shrink the number of temporary residents is to offer them the opportunity to remain permanently. And this is what Immigration Minister Mark Miller said. But he also says it doesn't mean that everybody who wants to stay will be able to. So it looks like they're going to be selectively choosing who it is they want to keep in Canada on a permanent basis. And this is all, you know, if you look at the housing situation and other services, they were impacted with the increase in temporary residents in Canada. Miller says, in fact, the people already here, their impact on affordability already been baked in. So it's smart to convert them over to permanent residents rather than keep them as temporary. So yeah, he does say that it doesn't mean by extension everybody entitled to stay here will be staying here in Canada. And also Miller said that they have announced plans to scale back the number of international students by putting a 2-year cap on new admissions. This was back in January. So yeah, so there's a lot of moving parts here. Interesting things. Conestoga is probably going to be impacted negatively as a result of all this. But hey, interesting stuff. I don't have anything to say about it.
Oh, good show tonight. That's where we'll wrap it up, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's.
Thanks for coming. Yeah, thanks for coming. I'll see some of you guys on Thursday or Friday.
Well, no, I just CP24 article. I thought it was an interesting article.
I thought
to
the
read.
Quote was nothing more permanent than a temporary program. It's actually nothing more permanent than a temporary resident. I fucking got that quote wrong for all these years, I guess.
Because it's an ever-evolving quote too.
Lots of blue sky above that. Anyway, good night, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
And don't be a cock.
Don't forget, everybody, lots of other stuff on CBP Media Network, including Two Whites and a Blue, me, Joey, my brother-in-law, Mike, and our friend Will talk about all the problems millennials are having with finance, romance, and just getting by. If you'd like CBP, if you like the NHL 94 podcast, I guarantee you'll like that one. Search for it, Two Whites and a Blue, anywhere you get your podcasts. We look forward to seeing you.